Welcome to Next on the Tee with Chris Mascaro, the show where you get the inside access to the best minds in the game. Each week, Chris has the privilege of chatting with top instructors, legendary players, course architects, and industry insiders. If you're looking to improve your game, gain a new perspective, or just hear some incredible golf stories, you are indeed in the right place.
You see, Chris, I haven't spoken to a press man in my life that is knowledgeable, seriously, as you are. Never.
You do such a great job. It kind of makes me feel good all of a sudden.
You do so much for the game. You're so kind to all of us that are out there in the game. You know, we need more people like you in the game of golf.
Thank you for pressing play. Now, grab your clubs, step up to the tee, and let's get started. This is Next on the Tee.
Hey, Next on the Tee Nation, thank you so much for pressing play on this very special bonus edition of the show featuring my conversations first with Tom Patry, and then later on we're going to be joined by Frank Darby. So the three of us will get into a wonderful conversation. Now, you guys know Frank. Frank has been a staple out on SiriusXM's PGA Tour channel with his show, along with Brian Kroll, called On Course. It airs Sunday mornings. Plus, Frank is also doing a show, Road to the Ryder Cup. And that's what we're going to talk about when he joins us. We're going to really get into the Ryder Cup conversation. Now, look, Frank has his foundation in New York golf, just like Tom Patry does. Both of these guys, and they've known each other for decades, both of these guys grew up in the Metropolitan section and have a huge history back there and have a lot of knowledge. Frank has set up tournament play there at Bethpage Black for the Metropolitan sections many times. He is also the former head coach at St. John's University. He was there for 20 years. One of his players, Keegan Bradley. So he's got a lot of knowledge about what might be on Keegan's mind, what the course setup might look like. Tom Patry has played many tournaments out there at Bethpage Black. He also has an eye for what that course could take a look at, what may give us an advantage or not. Both of these guys are going to be fantastic listens. So TP and I will kick off the show talking about a lot of different topics that have been in the news lately. We'll look back at the ball controversy that has come back up recently, thanks to the outgoing president of the USGA. You'll get Tom's thoughts on that. We'll also talk about tour exemptions that have been handed out, sponsors exemptions that have been handed out. People have sort of bantered that around because of the number of sponsor exemptions that Ricky Fowler got this year, and is that fair or not? And we'll also talk about Tommy Fleetwood, his boy J.J. Spahn, and look ahead a little bit to the conversation with Frank Darby about some guys who may or may not be on the U.S. Ryder Cup team and why they should or shouldn't be. And then Frank will jump in and he'll take it to a whole nother level. So a lot of Ryder Cup conversation coming your way on this special bonus edition of the show. Thank you so much for being here and tuning in. Sit back, relax, let us take your mind off everything else going on in your life for the next hour or so. Okay, but before we get into this week's show, I want to start off by giving a shout out to our good friends over at the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. TribLive.com is the leading news website for Western Pennsylvania with news around the clock. Pittsburgh pro sports coverage, a high school sports network, a podcast network, which you can find Next on the Tee on. So go out and bookmark TribLive.com or download the TribLive app for free and stay up to date with all the news in Western Pennsylvania and this show. I want to welcome a new member to the Next on the Tee family, Sunday Swagger. Tired of boring golf clothes? Sunday Swagger is changing the game with premium performance apparel that delivers the look and feel of $100 polos for much, much less. Never sacrificing on style or comfort, their bold polos, shorts, and outerwear feature four-way stretch and moisture-wicking fabric that moves with you, whether you're crushing drives or crushing happy hour. With over 300 unique designs and vibrant colors, ranging from bestsellers like Jawbreaker to exclusive collaborations with Guinness, Sunday Swagger offers something for everybody. And their matching prints for couples and families with children are flying off the shelves as their most popular styles. You might even recognize Sunday Swagger designs in popular Hollywood movies and TV shows, including Happy Gilmore 2. Sunday Swagger is guaranteed to turn heads and spark conversation. Visit SundaySwagger.com and join the Sunday Club for exclusive drops and member benefits. Sunday Swagger, it's your swagger. Embrace it. Own it. And folks, this year, Get ready to experience the game like you've never experienced it before at The Keep. It's the brand new Bill Bergen and Reese Jones co-designed course up at Macklemore. Nestled high atop Lookout Mountain, The Keep offers breathtaking vistas that are even more spectacular in person than they are in the pictures and the videos. With its challenging layout and awe-inspiring views, every round there is an unforgettable adventure. Whether you're taking on the signature holes or just soaking in the scenery, The Keep is where your best golf meets nature's finest backdrop. So grab your clubs and join us up at Macklemore this year. The Keep is open for preview play and it's waiting for you. But you gotta hurry now because spots and availability are filling up fast. So don't wait. Check out both courses, the Highlands and the Keep, for yourself online at themacklemore.com. And then do yourself and your buddies, or yourself and your family a solid by getting your spot reserved now. And experience distance and forgiveness all at once with the new QI35 driver from TaylorMade. QI35 is designed to give golfers more distance from more of the face while maintaining maximized forgiveness through high MOI designs. Whether you're looking for low spin and maximum workability or easy launch and plenty of adjustability, it's available in low spin, core, and max models. QI35 also has a full assortment of fairway woods and rescues to deliver distance and forgiveness throughout the top end of your bag. Check them all out online at TaylorMadeGolf.com. All right, now back in Next on the Tee with me is one of Golf Magazine's top instructors in our game, a guy who won 17, and I got corrected last time, 17 events during his junior golf career. Played his college golf at Florida Southern, where he was a two-time first-team All-American. In 1981, he led the Florida Southern Moccasins to a Division II national championship, and he won the individual honors. In 1992, he was inducted into the Sunshine State Conference Hall of Fame, turned pro and played professionally from 1981 to 1988. Here in the U.S., over in Mexico, Canada, Europe, and South Africa, he later became the director of instruction at Westchester Country Club, site of the Westchester Classic and several other PGA and LPGA Tour events. He's been named the Teacher of the Year everywhere he's been. And beyond all of that, he's an excellent writer. His work has been found in numerous publications like Golf Magazine, Golf Digest, and Golf Illustrated. Plus, he's written a wonderful book titled The Six-Spoke Approach to Golf that's five-star rated out on Amazon.com. Who am I talking about? Well, of course, I'm talking about our resident director of instruction, Tom Patrick. TP, how are you, my friend? TP, how are you doing? You okay?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. I'm actually got the TV on and I'm watching the Payne Stewart Awards. Paul Azinger is the winner and he's speaking. And you're ruining my TV time. So let's get on with this. Okay, please, let's go.
All right, let's get going because and here's what I want to start with. And I was gonna wait till the end, but I know this is gonna get you fired up, so I decided to move it up to the top.
Here we go.
All right, so a topic that had kind of died down for a while but popped back up recently is the whole idea around rolling the golf ball back. Favorite outgoing president, Fred Pepperall of the USGA, was asked about it at the U.S. Junior Amateur Championships, and he acknowledged that the strong resistance from the PGA Tour, the PGA of America, and the manufacturers are out there, but they are steadfast at the USGA and the RNA about making the current golf ball non-conforming starting in 2028 for professionals and 2030 for the rest of us. We know Augusta National is on board as well. Jay Monahan tried to get back into the players' good graces last year by saying the tour is just not going to accept it. But now that he's finally being moved out, Tom, your thoughts, do you think the tour comes around as we get closer into 2027, maybe late 2027? Or could there be a PGA Tour, LPGA Tour golf ball bifurcation where they have one ball for the regular tour events, and another ball for the majors?
Isn't it great when amateurs tell professionals what to do? You know, isn't it great that the ruling body is a group of amateurs telling professionals how to kind of run the world? Do I have to say more? So I think it's hard to put the cow back in the barn once he's out. You know, it's hard to put toothpaste back in the tube once it's out. So you're going to tell Rory McIlroy and Justin Rose and Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas that I know you like hitting at 330, but you're not going to hit 330 anymore because you're going to play this marshmallow that goes 290. And is it really going to affect anything? Is it really going to change the golf world on the professional side? And I'm a little bit surprised at Augusta jumping in line so quickly. And I still think we're 2 years away, and does it really happen? It could. Do the players resist it? Are there some people that decide not to play in certain events because of it? I just think we're creating more mess. You know, I mean, now it's called a penalty area. It used to be, red line and the yellow line. Now why are we changing all these things? Was the game broken? Was it really broken? Listen, the athlete has gotten better. He's gotten stronger. He's gotten faster. He's gotten bigger. Equipment has certainly gotten better. The golf ball is phenomenal. And what came before all that? These courses came before all that. And some of them are landlocked. It can't be made any longer. But I keep on going back to this point. The last time the United States Open was played at Marion, we were told Marion was going to be far too short to hold a major championship on. That it was going to be a massacre. The golf course was going to be embarrassed. And then Justin Rose won that tournament, one over par. The shortest golf course in the modern era of the U.S. Open, with all this equipment, all this technology, all these things that were supposedly going to destroy that golf course, and it was one over that won that championship. Where are we going with this thing? Where exactly are we going?
So let's take that a step further, Tom, because we just saw a U.S. Open at Oakmont, and they tell me that Oakmont is the hardest golf course on the planet. Well, what makes it the hardest golf course on the planet? It's the height of the rough. It's how narrow the fairways. It's how penal the areas are if you don't hit a perfect shot onto the green. I mean, can't we do that anywhere? I mean, look, I know that some tournaments aren't the same as others, and we have scores that get into the upper teens under par. And maybe that's fun. I mean, we have it, up in Connecticut, right? I mean, we get there every year and guys are threatening to shoot 58, 57. So do we have to do the things that we're doing with the equipment? Can't we just make the golf courses and the conditions of those golf courses tougher? And that way we don't end up with having to do anything with the equipment at all.
I think that's a great point. When you put 156 of the best players in the world on a golf course, and the fairways are wide and the rough is minimal and the greens are perfect, somebody's going to shoot a really low score. A really low score. Now, take the exact same golf course and change the fairway width, change the height of the rough, okay? Firm certain areas up, pin placements, the scores will not be the same, okay? So when they go to the John Deere and when they go to Hartford and they go to certain places, because of conditions and talent and depth of talent, somebody's going to shoot a really low score. Okay.
Yeah.
And what's the great thing about the PGA Tour? It's called variety. You have the majors. It's a different type of major. Look, Augusta doesn't play like the Open Championship, and the Open Championship doesn't play like TPC, right? So, that's variety, and I think that's healthy. Why do we have to roll back the golf ball? Why do we have to? Exactly. Why are we doing that?
Yeah. Well. Look, I mean, I get what everybody has been saying that is defending the idea of doing it, that water's a problem, course maintenance is a problem, it's expensive and all of those sorts of things. But I don't know, and I'm not an agronomist, but if you would let the rough grow up more, I don't think that costs you more. Maybe it does. Maybe you got to water it to get it up. But, let it rain, let the summer heat grow up the rough, cut it less. To me, that would save you a little bit on the expense side. But again, I don't know how much water you got to put on those things so they don't die and all of that sort of thing.
Why does every golf course have to be tough?
Well, I mean, every course, it doesn't have to be tough. But I mean, I get that, look, we guys are driving par fours now. I mean, look, Oakmont had to have a 300-yard par three to me, which is ridiculous. I mean, at some point it does get to be absurd. So, but to me, that's all around. Let's do some things to the golf course and we just not lengthen it all the time. I mean, why can't we put more fairway bunkers at the 310, 320 mark, right? Why can't we put a little gully? Why can't we do a berm? Why can't we do stuff like that with the golf course?
But Chris, on the other hand, that drivable par four has become pretty exciting part of every broadcast, has it not?
Huh? Yeah, I mean, something to be said for that.
It's kind of fun, right? I'm trying to think where recently there was a drivable par four with a lake right up against the green. And guys were going for it. And several guys made seven on the hole. Okay? So it didn't work out real well for everybody.
Yep.
So, I mean, I think that's kind of risk-reward. I think that's fun stuff, too. I think that's entertaining. Listen, at the end of the day, one of the reasons we watch golf is because it's entertaining, right? And I'm not sure that bogeys are very exciting. You know, I get that some people go to NASCAR to see a crash, and some people go to NASCAR to see a winner. So it depends what your tastes are. Some people go to a tournament to see, you know, guys make a lot of birdies, and some guys go waiting for the crash. That's entertaining. You know, it doesn't have to be the same every week.
Well, and I think that's a very good point, right? I mean, it doesn't have to be the same each and every week. I mean, if we're going out there watching the same 8-under score win every week, and it's just a matter of who goes out there and shoots it, it's not that much fun.
Right.
So I get that point, and that's a good one. Let's switch gears a little bit. A couple of things have happened from a player perspective over the last several weeks, starting with my boy Jordan Spieth not advancing in the playoff process and likely not being a member of this year's Ryder Cup team. So, but here's my question to you, because I know we've talked many times about Spieth and your thoughts about what needs to happen. Maybe he needs another voice from an instructor perspective, a teacher perspective. There's some things in his swing that need to change. And I know he's had the same coach, the same swing, and all of that worked out really well for a really long time.
It did?
It did. I mean, now look, I mean, 2014, 2015, 2016, he was the best player on the planet.
I don't know if you know, it's 2025 now.
I get that, but that's what I'm saying. It worked out for a really long time throughout his junior career and up through 2016, even 2017 when he won the Open, but not so much lately. So the fact that he hasn't progressed into the playoffs, he's likely not to get picked to play in this year's Ryder Cup. Do you think that puts a fire in his belly at all? Does that make him kind of reevaluate what he's doing, because he really hasn't been that competitive for 7-8 years now?
I think that different players have different priorities as they get older. I think that some guys get married and it fires them up to provide for their family. Some guys get married and they want to spend more time at home. Some guys want to work harder for their family, and some guys want to take some more time off to be with their wife and kids. I think everybody's different. I don't know this, obviously. I wonder if there are certain players on tour like Spieth, like Ricky, maybe like Justin Thomas. I don't know that, you know, they've made a lot of money quickly, and I'm not sure if they're as motivated as they were right out of the box. Obviously, those three guys came out swinging pretty fast and haven't quite been the same player in the last 3 or 4 years as they were. You know, you wonder if it's motivation, you wonder if it's lack thereof, whether it's, you know, whether they're looking in the mirror and really asking themselves the right questions. I don't know, but I just think that, you know, it's so competitive out there, Chris. It's so hard. There's so much depth out there now. You know, if you take your foot off the gas, you're going to get run over from behind. You're just going to get run over. You know, we talk about parity on the PGA Tour. Well, there is parity because the depth is incredible. I mean, you talk about low scores. Look what's being shot on the Korn Ferry Tour every week. Look at those scores. Those guys are itching to get to the next level. You know, you blink and you're going to get run over.
You mentioned Ricky Fowler a moment ago, and a lot is being made of how Ricky was able to make his way into the top 50. And according to Joseph LaMagna over at the Friday podcast, Fowler ranked 64th heading into the playoffs, top 70 get in. Of the 665 FedEx Cup points that he earned during the regular season, 319 or 48% of them came from getting a sponsor's exemption into a given tournament. And look, I get sponsors fund the tour, so they get to invite, you know, a handful of players that they want to see out there. And Ricky is a fan favorite, brings fans out to the tournament. But the mantra on the PGA Tour forever has been it's the ultimate meritocracy. If you want to win more money, play better. Chris Kirk is a guy who finished the regular season ranked 51st in the FedEx Cup standing, so he didn't get to advance beyond the first round, and he had zero sponsors exemptions this year. I mean, what are your thoughts on Ricky making it into the playoffs and getting into the second round of them with a little help from his friends?
Well, I think that, you know, there's two ways to look at this, Chris. First of all, is that fair? Chris Kirk, would Chris play better? Stop whining, play better. But on the other hand, it's a business out there, and certain guys move the needles and certain guys don't move the needles. Chris Kirk is a wonderful player. There's no two ways about it. He's a world-class player, but he's not the name, the household name, and doesn't move the needle like Ricky does for whatever reason, you know, and we know some of those reasons why Ricky moves the needle. So when a sponsor says, you know, listen, I got two spots this week, who am I going to give them to? It's a business. Who's going to bring, you know, more eyeballs to the screen? Chris Kirk or Ricky Fowler. And that's just the reality. So you can whine about that all you want, but that's just business. And that's just doing business. That's all that is.
Tom, we've talked about what a big Tommy Fleetwood fan you are. He still is yet at this point to win on American soil. He's taken two leads into the back nine on Sundays recently, first at the Travelers Championship, then a couple of weeks ago at the FedEx St. Jude. I love how positive Tommy has been framing those disappointing finishes, saying he'd rather have those things happen versus not being in that position at all. But has winning here in the U.S. gotten into Tommy's head? What needs to happen to kind of settle him down, not just at Tommy's level, but all of us? We all have things that we're trying to win. It may just be the Nassau we're playing against our buddies on a weekend. Can't get over the hump. What has to happen to settle Tommy down and get him to win here in the U.S.?
Well, let me ask you this one. If that 75-foot putt hadn't gone in at the Canadian Open a couple of years ago and he had won in Canada, would he have closed these two tournaments differently? I kind of believe he would have. You know, so, I mean, one got snatched from him and he did nothing wrong, kind of a miraculous J.J. Spawn type putt, you know, Scotty Scheffler type chip in, you know, to snatch that victory from Canada from him. Or he would have won there, you know, would have won there going away. You know, he definitely stepped on his own, you know what, coming down the stretch in these two events. I still think Tommy Fleetwood wins here. And if he wins once, he wins five or six times. He's just too good of a player. But you could have said the same thing to your argument, Chris, same thing about Colin Montgomery. Wonderful player, won a million times around the world, but couldn't get it done here. And had a lot of chances coming down the stretch like Fleetwood has had. So, you know, it's hard to win on the PGA Tour, man. It's really hard. And there's a lot of ways to win out there, and there's a lot of ways to lose out there coming down the stretch. I still think he gets it done at some point. I am a big Tommy Fleetwood fan. I think the comments he's made to protect his own psyche, which I think he's doing the right thing. You've got to, you know, that psyche is very, very fragile. You know, and we've had guys that have gone through what he's gone through, and they've disappeared from the TV screen forever. They folded their tents and gone home. He doesn't seem to have done that. He's still fighting. So I'm hopeful and optimistic that he gets it done at some point.
J.J. Spawn is another one of your boys. Since he nearly won the Players' Championship back in March, he's had an interesting quote recently about how he's feeling about things. Here's what he said. I don't know what's gotten into me, honestly. I'm just content with what I've done in this game. Now it's just like free rolling. I'm just trying to win, and that's just a freeing mentality to have. I have some feelings, if you will, about the word choice, but I'm choosing to take it as the pressure is off of him because of winning the U.S. Open, so now he can just freewheel it from here on out. What are your thoughts on his statement?
I think you have to, you know, I think that's open to interpretation. We can go both ways on this. He's said, you know, I'm content. You know, I'm going to sit on my laurels. I'm going to kind of glide through it. Or he said, you know, I still want, you know, I know how to win now. I'm not sure what he was trying to say. You know, when I watch JJ be interviewed, he doesn't seem comfortable at the microphone. I don't think he's, you know, he's really embraced what he's done so far in terms of comfort. I think he stumbles and bumbles in front of the microphone sometimes. So I'm going to give him a pass on that quote. He sure looked like he was trying to win against Justin Rose in that playoff. You know, that was a hell of a playoff and could have, you know, easily put that one to bed too. I think he still wants to win. I think that was, maybe we can misinterpret that quote a little bit. I still think he wants to win more.
In the next segment, our good friend Frank Darby is going to join us. We'll get deep into the Ryder Cup. But leading up to that, Rory McIlroy commented last week that he thinks it's impossible to be a playing captain, saying that there's too much for the captain to do during the week. He can't focus enough on playing. Now, we haven't seen a playing captain since Mr. Palmer did it back in 1963, and the Ryder Cup wasn't nearly the event that it is today. Do you think it is going to be too much for Keegan Bradley to try to do both?
You know, I think that this thing has gotten so big, so larger than life. The media demands are so different now than they were in 63. The television coverage, not only here, not only in Europe, but worldwide. It's a global event that people tune into that are golf fans. Like I said, the media demands, the dinners, the organization, you know, the families, the tickets, the friends that show up, you know, and then the pressure of playing. Can he do it? Will he try to do it? I don't know. I mean, I just think it's an awful lot to ask of any one person. And then where do you play? Do you play both matches? Do you play one match? Do you play singles on the last day? You know, do you turn it over to a vice captain? Are you comfortable with that? Is that why you were picked to play, or you're picked a captain? I don't know what he's going to do. I mean, he's clearly one of the best players in the world. He clearly has a lot of experience at Bethpage Black, having gone to St. John's. Tough spot, man. I don't know which way to go in this one.
This week is obviously the Tour Championship. We've had a number of iterations of scoring to determine who's going to win the FedEx Cup, Tom. It's supposed to be a season-long race. The original way we had with that complicated algorithm that was hard for everyone to follow and to keep up with, and it seemed like on that last day, leaders were changing all the time. You couldn't find it on the leaderboard. It was just so darn confusing. So they got away from that. And then we had obviously the staggered leaderboard, and that wasn't all that popular. And now we're going into this year where any one of the top 30 can win it. I mean, literally can win it, because it's just like a regular golf tournament. And I don't know that I like that even as much as the other two, because the regular season should mean something. I mean, the 30th ranked player coming in and getting a hot week, that beats Scottie Scheffler for the FedEx Cup, a guy who won five times this year, two majors. That seems like that would be criminal.
The Milwaukee Brewers are the best team by record in baseball right now, Chris. Are they going to win the World Series? Probably not.
You don't think?
Probably not.
Probably
not. So I get it. I've always thought that the playoff system in golf was a flawed animal. I don't think it makes any sense. Listen, we've said this before. I used to love when the last tournament of the year was at Disney and 125 guys kept their cards, and guys from like 100 to 150 showed up at Disney because they were fighting for their life to get back on tour the next year. And we go to this playoff system, and we haven't really figured out a way to get it right. And I still don't think it's right. The staggered start was an abomination. That clearly was not very popular, not only with the players, but with us, the golf fan. I don't know what the answer is, but I don't think they've got the answer yet.
All right, we've got our good friend Frank Darby.
Okay, let me say one thing.
Uh-oh.
Let me Let me just say one thing.
Should I unmute his mic first?
No. Leave his mic open. So we grew up together. We've been friends a long time. But I just want you to know something. I've got my snorkel out. and you should give Darby a snorkel, because once he starts talking, he won't come up for air. Okay? So once you ask him the first question, I don't know why I'm on this segment any longer, because I'm not going to get a word in.
Okay, I'm sorry to butt in here, but as you heard, Frank Darby is going to join us in a minute. Frank is just spectacular, one of the great people in our game. Before he joins us, I want to remind you about our wonderful friends over at On Point Golf, and their out of this world On Point Golf Ball Marker. And if you don't have one, folks, you really need to go check it out at onpointgolf.us. Get the number one ball marker in the game of golf. On Point is the only three-dimensional ball marker out there. With alignment technology and a removable coin that is approved to use according to the rules of golf. As you know, putting is all about line and pace. Mark your ball with OnPoint, engage with your three-dimensional ball marker, and have more confidence in your line, execute the putt, and you're going to lower your scores. Do what the likes of Jim Furyk, PGA professionals, and amateurs alike are doing now. They use the number one ball marker in golf and they lower their scores. You know Ken Duke and Thongchai JD. They won for the first time on the PGA Tour in 2023, and they were using an on-point ball marker. Get yours at onpointgolf.us and make more putts. And oh, by the way, you can also customize the removable coin for any club, event, or corporate outing. They make really great tee gifts and custom products. That's also going to help lower your score. I use on-point ball markers. Mine is black and gold, 3D black golf ball with a gold line down the middle to help me line up my putts. It's like having a 15th club in my bag. It's helped my game. Why wouldn't you let it help yours? Again, onpointgolf.us. See what I'm talking about. Order yours today. I also want to remind you about our wonderful friends over at Squares Golf.
So Nick here. What if there was a golf shoe embraced by hundreds of thousands of golfers, celebrated for its stability, comfort, and distance? What if this shoe earned the title of most technologically advanced golf shoe by Sports Illustrated? And what if the company behind that shoe spent the last year perfecting a brand new category of golf footwear? Well, the what if is here. Introducing the all-new Pro S2 LT by Squares, a new class all of its own, the perfect blend of lightweight comfort and stable performance. You'll notice the difference. Change your shoes, change your game. Squares.
I also want to give a special shout out to our wonderful friends over at the Pittsburgh Brewing Company. Their pumpkin ale is back, folks. It's the number one selling pumpkin beer in Western Pennsylvania and incredibly popular everywhere their beer is sold. Why? Because it's everything you love about beer disguised as everything you love about homemade pumpkin pie. Go online to pittsburghbrewing.com to check that one out. Plus, their other great beers, including the Blockhouse Blueberry Wheat, along with my family's favorites, Iron City and Icy Light, of course. Plus, make plans to attend Oktoberfest on Saturday, September 13th and Saturday, September 27th. Tickets are on sale now at pittsburghbrewing.com. All right, well, I'll wait a second and unmute him. But before I bring him into the show, let me give him a nice introduction. As everybody knows, Frank has his own show. It's called On Course, which airs on SiriusXM's PGA Tour channel. He partners with Brian Kroll. They do a fantastic job. Frank, looking back over the course of his career, graduated from St. John's University and would later go on to coach the men's golf team there for 20 years, led them to the 2014 Big East title. He was named the coach of the year that year. Among the many great players that he had an opportunity to coach was 2011 PGA champion and our upcoming Ryder Cup captain, Keegan Bradley. Frank has been active in the Metropolitan PGA section for over 30 years, and he served as the tournament operations director. So he might know a thing or two about Bethpage Black and have some insights on what Keegan might do to set up the course for the Ryder Cup. And I couldn't be more thrilled that I get to have him and Tom Patrick both together here on this segment of Next on the Tee. Mr. Darby, how are you, my friend?
Do I have to share this thing with Patrick or what?
Exactly. Here we go. Darbs, how are you, my man?
Hello, Tom. How you doing?
I'm good, pal. Where you at?
I am in Boston. We just took my wife and daughter up here, and we've been kind of hanging around for a couple of days. And, you know, she's a sophomore in high school, but, you know, she wants to go to one of the Ivies. So we're starting early and hung out at Harvard this last couple of days.
I hope she's got your wife's brains then, Darbs.
Most of them, yeah, definitely.
Good, good. Then we have a chance that we're okay.
You gonna get in a Red Sox game?
Definitely not. Yankees.
Thanks, Darby. Thank you, Darby. Thank you, Darby. Thank
Yankees
you.
Are playing the Red Sox the next what four games on the
Correct.
Week? So that's right. Enough. That's enough.
All right, so let's talk a little golf, Frank, because the U.S. has won so few of these Ryder Cups since the mid-1980s. I worry about the courses that we've chosen to host it at. We were last at Bethpage for the 2019 PGA Championship. Unfortunately, Brooks Koepka and Dustin Johnson were the top two players. Brooks getting the win. Those guys are over on LIV now. So we're not going to have a champion from Bethpage to run out there. I'm concerned about what we're going to see when we've got a fantastic European team against a U.S. team that I'm not feeling so strongly about. What are your feelings as we look ahead a month to get to this Ryder Cup?
Hey, listen, I think the Americans are got a really, really strong team. And, you know, you just never know. I think everybody's going to be prepared. And I think the Americans are going to be the favorite. And it's not because of the golf course scenario, but because, you know, of Keegan Bradley and the fans. I think the fans are going to spur them on as well. But I think the Black is going to be a really good golf course for the Ryder Cup. I think they're going to set it up. Probably going to be a lot similar to what happened at Hazeltine, try to make it maybe a birdie fest. I think the Americans have got the opportunity with their players to go to shoot low numbers, make some birdies, and just win, I think, pretty easily.
Hey, Chris.
Yeah.
Hey Darbs, for people listening out there, one of the things they don't know is Frank has been a longtime setup man for the Met PGA, and he set up the Black on numerous occasions. Him and I have played a lot of golf on Black. I know he has. I certainly did as a kid growing up. Darbs, I don't see Black being a birdie fest unless the setup is a lot different than maybe I picture it. How do you see it being set up?
I think that there, we had, I'm doing a podcast called The Road to the Ryder Cup, and I had the golf course superintendent on who I'm pretty friendly with, Michael Hadley, and they're going to probably not grow the rough up, let the Americans, you know, drive the ball. They've got an advantage on the driver. And I just think that it'll be set up for birdies as well. I mean, Tom, you know it. There's only a few greens out there where they're a little tricky. There's a lot of little nuances on those greens once they get to a certain speed, like the old superintendent and my friend Craig Curry.
Yeah, right.
But I think they can make a lot of putts out there.
I think Frank makes a good point. Those greens are not particularly undulating. There are some nuances, but they're, by tour standards, they're pretty docile in terms of undulation. And if the speed is really, really, really quick, you can be pretty aggressive on those greens. And it's funny, I've never seen that golf course with no rough. So I don't know what that would look like. I mean, I remember my golf there. I played a couple of state opens on that golf course. And, you know, you hit it out of the fairway and you couldn't advance the golf ball. So if they cut the rough down and it's you know, docile, it would be a different golf course, a much different golf course. And like I said earlier, Frank's done a lot of setup on that golf course for the state open. So he would know best, much better than me in terms of setup. I've never seen it without any rough. So I can't even picture Black without rough, but that would make it very different.
To his point though, Tom, if they cut the rough down and essentially allow the Americans to bomb the heck out of the driver, and this becomes more of a putting contest, does that give us an advantage? Is that good for the U.S. team?
I think this whole thing about advantage in terms of talent is a false bravado. Listen, golf is a worldwide game now. It's a global game. It's not like that European team doesn't have a lot of talent on it. So I think Frank makes a good point. I think the advantages are the guys are home. The advantages are that New York crowd will be big time behind them, and they'll be raucous, man. They'll be That place will be rocking in New York for sure. They will give that that European team a lot of grief, and they'll make them as uncomfortable as they can possibly make them. Is that enough of an advantage? It could be the determining factor. They could be the sixth man for sure. That crowd will not be friendly to the European team at all.
Tom, earlier this year, you and I lamented about the ticket prices that are being charged. $750 is pretty steep for most middle-class Americans to afford to be able to go out there, but they sold out Thursday through Sunday in 48 hours. They had over 500,000 people apply for the ticket lottery. They're expecting about 50,000 people a day. Are you still concerned that the crowd may be too corporate to be loud, boisterous, and raucous enough to get behind the guys?
I'm going to make a really silly prediction. Bethpage, as a facility, is Frank back?
Yes.
I'm back.
Frank, jump in here. But Bethpage, as a facility, is the home of public golf in New York. It's where the mailman and the plumber and the contractor and, you know, and the policeman and the fireman, you know, all play golf. And that's their home. And I would suspect that ticket or no ticket, some of those boys are going to find their way onto the property. And if they do, and we get another 10,000 of those characters on the property, there will be some noise, a lot of noise. I remember sitting on 15 fairway, Frank, and Sergio Garcia was playing with Davis Love. I think, I'm trying to think of what event it was. I guess it was an Open. And that's when Sergio, you know, was regripping the club 45 times.
Yeah.
And they were screaming at him, hit it. And just followed him around, torturing him for 4 hours. They can be, as Frank knows, that New York crowd, you know, whether you're going to a Yankee game, a Giant game, a Ranger game, or a Knick game, they can just wear your ass out. They'll be tough.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm not certain how many of those guys will be able to sneak in there because security is going to be on top of things. But, you know, I think, and Tom, you're going to definitely agree with this. I think the New York fans and we're a little bit misunderstood. Wouldn't you think so?
I think
misunderstood.
We're clearly understood, Frank. Very clearly understood.
And I'm not talking thinking wise. I think they're very. I think they're good fans, and you hear
the passion.
They're knowledgeable as well, and yeah, you're right. There was nothing better than Sergio. I was around there on 17 when they were counting every time he re-gripped it, you know, out loud, 8,000 people. And same thing when they sang Phil Mickelson, Happy Birthday.
Right,
I mean,
right,
it went
right
on the entire length of the hole. So, right. You know, I think the fans are going to, you know, I think the one thing that the PGA of America is a little leery of is there's a lot of downtime. What are they going to be doing? And, you know, they don't want this turning into a Hazeltine first tee up there. Remember, that was
right,
completely out of control. So, but I think you're right. I think it's not going to be the people out there. It's going to be the corporate people out there, mostly.
Frank, I want to kind of go through both rosters with you, and we'll start with the six that we know are in on the U.S. team. Scottie Scheffler, 0-2-2 last time around in 2023. JJ Spahn, obviously, is a Ryder Cup rookie. Xander Schauffele, 1-3 last time. Russell Henley, a rookie, but partnered with Scottie Scheffler at the President's Cup last year, and he was 3-1, and they were fantastic as a duo. Russell would go on to beat Sanjay M 3-2 in the singles. Bryson DeChambeau, obviously, not on either of the last Ryder Cup or President's Cup team. If you go back to 2021, he was 2-0-1. Another guy who got paired with Scotty, and they were 1-0-1 as a duo. Bryson won his singles match over Sergio 3-2. And then Harris English, who was playing in a second Ryder Cup. Now, it's been a little bit. He played back in 2021. He was 1-2 in those matches. He lost his singles to Lee Westwood. So when you look at those six guys, Scheffler, Spahn, Schauffele, Henley, DeChambeau, and Harris English, how do you feel about that top six?
Yeah, I like the top six. I think there's it'll be interesting to see who gets paired up right here. I think we've got some rookies. We're probably going to get some rookies on the next six picks. And, you know, we can't forget that the, and Dave Maher brought this up on my serious show last week. When they won at Whistling Straits, the Americans had six rookies on that team. So I think we're going to have a few different combinations. And, hey, we've got the best player in the world in Scottie Scheffler. I'm sure he's going to play as much as he can. And I'll tell you what, you were talking about him before. I'm a big J.J. Spawn fan. And I think he just drives it good. He just looks like he's, you know, a cool character out there. And, you know, so I like the six right now because they've been playing great.
TP, what are your thoughts on the U.S.'s top six?
I just think the word rookie is you can throw that word away. These guys are so seasoned now. I think Frank would agree. I mean, these guys play golf all over the world. They play for a lot of money. They play 25 events a year. Sure, they want to play for their country. Sure, it's different. It's a team event. But the word rookie doesn't apply anymore on either team. On either team. Because, you know, obviously Europe will have a few fresh guys too. You know, once the bell goes off, these guys are thoroughbreds, man. They know how to compete.
Well, when you look at the European team, most of those guys, at least the top six, again, we don't know the captain's picks at this point, but they're top six seasoned veterans. Rory McIlroy, 16-13-4, all-time in the Ryder Cup. Robert McIntyre, the youngest, if you will, in Ryder Cup experience, 2-0-1 last time. Tommy Fleetwood, 7-3-2. Justin Rose, 14-9-3. Tyrrell Hatton, 5-4-2, but unfortunately, last time he was 3-0-1 against us. And then Shane Lowry, who actually doesn't have a great record, 2-3-1 in his two Ryder Cup matches. A lot of veterans there. But as you're saying, you don't think that makes a difference, Tom?
I think they're all veterans, Chris. I think that, you know, they're, I mean, just pick a name, Harris English. I mean, he's a wonderful player, man. Wonderful driver of the golf ball. You know, I mean, I just think the word rookie, you can throw it out the window for this. I really do.
Frank, if you look at the next six guys based on points for the U.S. team, Justin Thomas, Colin Morikawa, Ben Griffin, Maverick McNealy, Keegan Bradley, Brian Harman. How do you feel? Do you think Keegan's going to end up going chalk here? Or can you see that maybe somebody else are reached further down in the list for a captain's pick? Maybe a Cam Young, Patrick Cantlay, Sam Burns. How do you think he rounds out this team?
Yeah, I think there's going to be a couple of surprises right here. I think Cam Young is definitely under consideration right there. I guess we're going to have to see what happens this week at the Tour Championship right there. But I like, you know, that whole like 7 to, you know, 13, you know, list right there of players. I think that's going to determine what happens right here, at least in my eyes.
Frank, explain to everybody who's listening your relationship with Keegan and why you have a relationship with him, and make a comment on what you think he's going to do as far as playing or not playing.
Well, let's see. I recruited and coached Keegan for 4 years at St. John's University. It was just a fantastic experience. You know, he was great to have around, natural born leader. Never really had to say anything to him. He knew he had just fantastic work ethic. He was, you know, he really wasn't serious about, you know, the college experience in regards to the social part of it and partying. He was into playing golf. We had a very, very strong team right there. His number two guy, the number two guy there was Michael Ballo, just Connecticut Open. You know, the thing that Keegan brought to that team for 4 years was just being able to, the team chemistry end of it. You know, they all lived together in a really neat house close to St. John's. They did everything together, you know, including going to college basketball games and, you know, and practicing as much as they could and playing great golf courses. We only had six guys on the team, so they all play together. They always love to play different kinds of games, and you know, and he kept those guys going. He kept them motivated, and you know, never really had to worry about what they were doing, because the one thing that they did do and was they were on the search for pizza. That's all they ever did. They honestly and truly, you know, I'd call them up the next day and say, hey, what did you guys do yesterday if I wasn't there with practice? And they'd say, well, yeah, we played Glen Oaks. And then we went to a couple of places trying to find some, you know, great pizza. And it was true. They did do that. So I think he's going to be really well prepared. I think he surrounded himself with a lot of great people growing up and had a lot of people behind him, as he has right now with John Wood. And, you know, his wife, Jillian, is a star as well. So I'm sure she's going to handle the social end of it and the wives and be just like Keegan with the way that he does stuff with team chemistry.
Frank, can he do both? Can he be a playing captain?
You know, like he said, why not? You know, the issue is he has nobody to talk to about this, you know, whether he can do it. I think he can. I think he's got a pretty good group of vice captains right there. Jim Furyk. I mean, I thought Cantlay and Fowler coming out the other day and saying that he could do it and he should do it. I think that's a big, big thing. I just think it's really going to come down to the Tour Championship right here. What happens here?
Tom, getting back to the other six guys that are out there, potentially, if you go the chalk line, Justin Thomas was a controversial pick last time around. Colin Morikawa has had more caddies this summer than he has top tens this season. You look at Patrick Cantlay. I don't know if they can find a hat that'll fit him. Your thoughts on these? Do you think he goes chalk? Or I know you're big on Cam Young as well. Do you think he goes for a couple of guys that are a little further down the list?
I like Cam Young a lot myself. I think he's playing good at the right time. Frank and I both know David Young's dad very well. Cam's a hard worker. Little trivia fact, he won the Met Amateur on Bethpage Black. New York kid, a lot of support in that area. My question is, as a young guy, is the stage too big for him? I don't know. You know, finished second at the Open Championship at St. Andrews. It wasn't too big for him there. He's a pretty ballsy kid. And again, he's playing good at the right time. Wouldn't be a bad pick. Morikawa scares me right now. He just seems like he's got a little sibyl in him this summer. He's all over the place. That would worry me a little bit. Justin Thomas hasn't shown great form recently, so that would concern me. Keegan's got a hard couple of choices to make in the second six, I think.
Frank, when you think about a guy like a Justin Thomas, when we look back a couple of years ago, he was controversial. They said, you know, hey, you can't have a Ryder Cup team that doesn't include Justin Thomas. He has certainly been a huge player for the U.S. team for several years. How much does a guy like JT, or just a guy who is a good locker room presence, has a good personality about him, who gets fired up, how important do you think someone like that is to the U.S. team?
Oh, I think he's a valuable member of this team. And like you said, I think he gets people fired up and, you know, he shows all his emotions on his sleeves. I mean, not just his sleeves, everywhere on his body. And I think that Bethpage Black is kind of made for him. Hits it a little right to left. And, you know, if he's ever had some issues with putting, I think he can handle those greens. But I think he's going to be a key member of this team, and he'll want to play every match. You know that.
I hope he's right. I hope Frank's right.
So like TP just said, Frank, would a guy like Colin Morikawa give you pause? I mean, he's really only had one good finish since the Masters. He finished tied for eighth a couple months ago at the Rocket Mortgage Classic. He missed his last two cuts prior to the playoffs, and the caddy situation has been crazy over the last few months. And then he had the run-ins with the media and all that sort of stuff. Does a guy like that and where his headspace is at, would he give you pause to be part of that team room?
Yeah, I think there's probably some concerns there about, I always get concerned watching him on TV when he gets that double cross going, you know, he's trying to hit cuts, you know, and he's comes out all the time. You read his interviews. I didn't know whether I had a draw this morning or I was cutting it and this and that, but I think he's going to have a little bit of time here to get himself going too. As much as these guys play, maybe he needs the 2 or 3 weeks that's going to be off here between the selections and the actual Ryder Cup.
Tom, as I mentioned, Scottie Scheffler, 0-2-2 in the last Ryder Cup, but we all know he's the best player on the planet right now, and he is just steamrolling his way to the top of leaderboards. But if he were to have a bad week, does the U.S. team go as Scottie Scheffler goes? Can there be somebody else that could pick up the team if he is not playing well? Or are they going to be really dependent on him to go out there and play as many matches as possible and maybe do a Dustin Johnson and go 5-0?
I think Frank would agree with me. I don't think you have to worry about Scottie Scheffler. I think he's motivated based on that last Ryder Cup to right his record a little bit. He's playing great. You know, I think he wants to you know, kind of turn that thing around on his own resume. But again, I think it goes back to there's a lot of talented people behind him. I don't think he has to carry the team. I think he has to do his part, but I think everybody has to step up. This I don't think this is going to be a runaway on either side. This is going to come down to the singles on Sunday, and I think it's going to be close. Like, again, like you said, Chris, that top six on the other side is pretty talented.
Frank, what do you think? Does the U.S. go as Scottie Scheffler goes, or does he not have to carry the team like TP was just saying?
Yeah, I think he's just a given. I think you just put him on the side, let him go. I think you're going to see, I mean, hey, listen, I think it was a unique pick by the PGA with Keegan. I think you're going to see some unique pairings, and I think you're going to see Keegan not afraid to change some things up right here. And I think he'll kind of go with the hot hands, and I think he's just not going to let what happened when they did not play him and Mickelson in that afternoon match that time. I think that was not playing the hot hand because they were really playing well. So I think he's going to be it'll be very interesting to see what these pairings are.
Let's take that a step further, though, Frank. How great a pairing, how exciting a pairing were Keegan and Phil Mickelson?
Oh, that was like the best pairing of all time. I mean, hey, Keegan was pretty much a rookie then. And, you know, he got paired with the master, and they just, you know, they just fed off each other. And that was an unbelievable, you know, couple of days there, the two of those guys.
It's going to be kind of like this Boston Yankee series with Giancarlo Stanton and Aaron Judge. You know, something like, don't you think, Frank?
Yeah. There'll be a lot of swinging and missing.
Here we go.
That's what we'll see from those two guys.
There we go. See, Frank, you know what's going on here, right?
Well, yeah, I can kind of say it, but I thought we were talking golf, not baseball.
Yeah. All right, just a couple more before I let you two guys go. I want to get to the back end of the European team. When you look at 7 through 12 based on points, Sepp Straka, guy went 1-2 last time he and JT, he lost in the singles to JT 2-up. Rasmussen Højgaard, a guy who we think didn't play last time, but you never know. He's got a twin brother, and you never know if those two guys go into a porta potty, who's coming out. If one's playing bad, maybe the other sub comes in, but he would be a rookie this time around. Ludvig Åberg, who was a rookie last time, went 2-2. Victor Hovland, 3-1-1 last time. Matt Wallace is a rookie, but he finished tied for third at the PGA Championship in 2019 there at Bethpage. And we all know about Matt Fitzpatrick, a guy who always shows up in the majors, but 1-2 last time in the Ryder Cup. TP, when you look at those guys, Straka, Højgaard, Åberg, Hovland, Wallace, Matt Fitzpatrick, give you pause?
No, world-class, all proven, all talented. Chris, I'm going to go back to what I said. There's no rookies anymore. These guys are really talented people. I mean, Seth Straka, really? I mean, he's a great player, man. Matt Fitzpatrick, you know, he's a bulldog. Nobody's a rookie. These guys are all good. I'm going to go back to what I said. I don't think this thing is a runaway. I think this is going to be absolute fist fight right till the end.
Frank, what do you think when you look at the next six on the European point standings that make a formidable team? What are your thoughts on Straka, Højgaard, Åberg, Hovland, Wallace, Fitzpatrick?
Yeah, I think that's six really strong PGA Tour players. These guys are, you know, I think they need to change the rule, Tom. I think they need to make certain that these Europeans have a residence and live for 7 months of the year in Europe.
Agreed.
They're here more than the Americans are. I mean, they all, you know, it's not even a, it should just be a U.S. versus a U.S. type of
Chris, I think Frank is making a joke, but he's making a great point because
I think he's making a great point too.
Because you talk about American course setups, these guys are playing here all the time. We're not surprising them with anything at Bethpage. I think it goes back to what Frank said earlier. The wild card is the fan. I think the fan is a big deal at Bethpage WAC. I don't think the golf course is a big deal because I think these guys play American golf all the time. So I don't think we have an advantage on the golf course necessarily, but we do have an advantage in the grandstands.
Well, that's true. And I tell you, from everyone around here in the state of Georgia, when we see Sepp Straka playing for the European team, right, it's a little hard.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
We talked odds on favorites. Well, you know, the U.S. is -145 to win this thing. So you got to bet $145 to win 100. So to me, that seems like they are pretty big favorites. Frank, if you're a betting man, you're putting down 145 to win 100 on the U.S.?
I'm not really a big betting man, but yes, I am. Definitely.
You, TP? You bet 145 to win 100?
I'm laying off the betting on this one. I don't think there's a favorite here.
Wow. No favorite?
No favorite. Okay.
Wow. All right. Before I let you guys go, Frank, remind our listeners how they can listen to your show, apparently shows now, and then follow you on social media as well.
Yeah, well, I've got a podcast that we've done for like 19 straight weeks called The Road to the Ryder Cup. It's on every social media platform right now. I do it with Jeff Poplawski, who's the wellness and recovery director for the USGA. And he's out of Bethpage, so it's been pretty, we've been getting some great guests. And then we're on, the name of our show with Brian Kroll on Sirius XM is called On Course, live at 10 o'clock on Sunday morning. So you can get us on those two medias.
How can we see you on social media?
With the Road to the Ryder Cup, we're on LinkedIn. We're on every platform there is right now, our show.
On Twitter, aren't you at FDarbs?
Yes, I'm at FDarbs FDarbs at Twitter, FDarbs at Instagram as well. So you can catch me there as well.
TP, remind everybody how they can find you.
Who cares? Here's the deal. I want to say a little something about my friend Frank Darbs on the way out here. Nobody probably in the last, I'm 66, and I don't know how old Darbs is now, but I'm 66 in the last 30 years of my career, which started in the Mets section, nobody has done more, been more involved, been more positive in amateur golf, in college golf, with the Met PGA, in giving back than Frank Darby. So you're really lucky to have him on, Chris. And then you yourself do a great job on this platform, and we're so grateful to be on with you. So who cares where I am? Darbs, it was great being on with you.
It's funny. We've been playing together for a long, long time. And, you know, Mike Diffley and I used to drive out and play with Tom out there on the island. We always had a blast there as well. But same with Tom. I mean, he's been great for the game of golf, great for teaching. And like I said, been a good friend for a long time.
Tom Patry, Frank Darby, it is a huge thrill to get to spend some time with both of you. I can't thank you enough for taking time out of your collective busy schedules to come back and be a part of the show. TP, it goes without saying, a huge privilege to get to do this show with you every other week. Frank Darby, a third time here on the show. You guys are fantastic. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, anytime. Hey, thank you for having me. And Tom, nice talking to you.
Okay, you guys. Great being with you. Have a great evening.
Take care, Tom. Take care, Frank.
Thank you.
That is the great Frank Darby and Tom Patry, folks. What a huge privilege to get to spend time with both of those New York guys. They're misguided with their Yankee thing. I can't understand what happened. I blame their parents. But outside of that, two of the best people in our game and guys that are intimate with what it's like playing golf in and around the New York area, certainly at Bethpage Black. Frank, with his time with Keegan Bradley, again, head coach at St. John's and had the opportunity to coach Keegan for 4 years and has certainly known him for a very, very long time. So he's got a little insight into what Keegan might be doing and what the course setup might be. Again, as Tom mentioned, and we've talked about with Frank in the past, a guy who did a lot of tournament setup for the Met section. He was there for 30 plus years. So he certainly knows a thing or two of what it's like to play at Bethpage and how that course could be set up in a way to kind of give the U.S. team a bit of a leg up. So I'm sure he's going to be right about the things that he said. What a wonderful podcast he has. Road to the Ryder Cup, 19 of those episodes so far, and we've got a few more before we get to those matches. At F Darbs is where you're going to find him on Instagram and X. At Tom Patrick Golf is where you're going to find TP on Instagram, and at T Patrick Golf as well. Two pages going now on Instagram. And if you were around the last couple episodes, you understand why some crazy things happened on Instagram for Tom and got those things rectified. So you can find them both places. And as I always say, don't forget to go out and subscribe to Tom's YouTube channel. You got 350 plus free playing lessons waiting for you there. So like we say, Tom will be back in a couple of weeks. Hopefully we get the privilege of having Frank Darby back on the show again before too long. All right, my friends, it is time for me to put a bow on this edition of Next on the Tee. I want to thank both of those guys, Tom Patrick, Frank Darby, for joining me this week. Now, next week, I'm going to be off. I'm going to be recovering from ankle replacement revision surgery. If you recall, last December, I had ankle replacement surgery. Things were going fine with the recovery until they weren't. The pain came back. A nuclear medicine bone scan revealed that the bottom part of the artificial joint has come loose, so they're going to have to go back in there and replace that piece. So I'll be back in a couple of weeks, and when we reconvene, Tom Patrick will be right back again. The confidence doctor, Dr. Bob Winters, will be here. And the head golf professional at one of the top courses in our country, Seminole Golf Club, Matt Cahill, will make his next On the Tee debut. So folks, it's going to be a fantastic one. I hope you'll come back and join us. I want to thank our friends again over at the Pittsburgh Tribune Review for hosting this show on their site. For coverage of everything going on in Western Pennsylvania, including your favorite sports, go to triplive.com. You can find this show by then clicking on the sports section tab, and you're going to see the most recent episode right there front and center for you on the homepage of the sports section. Or you can click on sports and then podcast network. Then you'll see the Next on the Tee logo. If you click on that, many of the most recent episodes from this season are going to be right there for you as well. You can also find this show pretty much anywhere you get your podcast content, including over on Good Pods, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and GolfNewsNet.com. And as always, a big thanks to the wonderful folks over there at Good Pods for making this show one of their recommended podcasts. So please download the free app and stream your favorite podcast right there from your favorite device. But like I say each and every week, my biggest thanks go out to all of you for being the greatest supporters in the history of podcasts. I appreciate each and every one of you so very much. Until next time, hit him straight, my friends.
Thanks for joining Chris again this week on Next on the Tee. We hope you enjoyed the conversations as much as we did. Please share the show with your golf buddies and be sure to follow it on TribLive or your favorite podcast app so you never miss an episode. Thanks for pressing play and being part of the journey. We'll see you next week, right here, where the best minds in golf share their stories.